Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my Wild Country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning with Dusty Hara and NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal in Michigan, most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one to stop me.
On 1080.
I'm the best ever.
The Fan.
All right, hour number three, Dusty and Cam.
So, Ryan, you put out a tweet regarding redheads. We got into this, and I like this. To submit my second piece of evidence to the court, as I retweeted and put that back in there, the Billy Madison O'Doyle Rule segment of the most hated family in cinema history is okay. The O'Doyle family, a stereotype that all redheads are bullies and punks, and yet that their family drives off in a station wagon to their death.
But weren't they beating up on everybody?
Beating up on everybody.
If they're not jerks, are they villains?
But that's the thing, is that the perception is that redheads are jerks, and that was there out there. And it put a stereotype of all that, and there it is.
I think that was just the O'Doyle family.
You know what, Cam, though? I think you'll be interested to know. I did not see this coming. Our poll, very close currently, over 80 votes in, 52% of the people say Andy Reid, not a redhead. I did not expect that.
You expected a landslide, didn't you?
I don't know about a landslide, but I thought that that Andy Reid is a redhead was going to be the winning side of that poll.
I'm just telling you right here, the proof is going to be, it's just overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
So I have a little piece of news. It's not really breaking news, but it's some kind of exciting news, and it merges two of our favorite things. Well, one of our favorite things and two of Cam's favorite things.
Redheads?
What's happening in November this year, Cam?
Oh my gosh. November 14th.
And apparently, so this just tweeted out from the Masters 5 minutes ago, Fred Ridley, chairman of Augusta National, announced that the Masters will provide expansive slate of content across multiple platforms, including hosting College Game Day live
from
Augusta.
Shut the front door.
Wow.
You got to be kidding.
No.
All right.
How is CBS is willing to let that happen on the weekend, huh?
I mean, no, ESPN this is the Masters gets the Friday, or gets the Thursday-Friday rounds as it is right now. So
that's the caveat. CBS doesn't get to say anything. The Masters tell you what to do.
College Game Day from Augusta National.
Ah, that is spectacular. Well, you also remember, too, is that ESPN carries usually the first two rounds of the Masters. Well, so they already have an ABC. Yeah, I know. I was trying to decipher why they would have CBS allowing that, to really give you the reason why CBS would allow it, because they have a partnership already. So College Game Day. I mean, why wouldn't it make sense? Georgia, great state of Georgia, football, golf, the best tournament in the world. It's not close. It's the best tournament in the world.
What games are that weekend? November 14th, you say? That would be, what, week 11 in college football? So that would be the week that we get, scanning. Wisconsin-Michigan is that weekend.
Do we get a good Pac-12 game at all? What's the best Pac-12 game that weekend? Sorry. What's the best SEC game?
Well, I'm just looking at games, period.
You get a Georgia game?
Well, I'm assuming they play at some point.
Right.
But I don't know. It doesn't look... LSU is that weekend.
Oh.
But LSU's not very good this year.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't really have any big marquee games. I think that may have something to do with it. Right there. is the fact that there aren't any like big time games. That's Georgia's at Missouri.
That's legendary. That
that's
we're
going to
get
cool.
College game day at the Masters. Wonder where they're going to set up. When they're going to allow them to have their set.
Yeah.
This would be awesome.
The Pac-12 schedule, not good that week.
Really?
No.
What's the best game?
The Pac-12 schedule for week 11, you got Utah, UCLA, Oregon, Washington State, USC, Arizona, Oregon State, Washington, Colorado, Stanford, Cal, Arizona State. That's probably it. Cal, Arizona State.
From right now, from the way we look at it, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. But I have no idea what to expect from Washington. But that if Oregon State improves and there's a little bit of regression at Washington,
yeah, they've improved.
Then that could be a very good game too.
Yeah.
Washington.
That's got all that kind of Pac-12 after dark potential written
sure
all
does.
Over it too.
Show.
Yes, it does.
All right, well, that's awesome. That is awesome.
I can't believe I'm going to get two Masters in less than 6 months. No, wait. 4 months. 5 months. 5 months.
It's about 6 months. Well, November to December, December to January, yeah, January, February, February, March, March,
I'm
April.
Going week to week because it's the first of, it's usually the second week of April.
Yeah, so 5 months.
Get the first week, so five,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Hey, NFL trade deadline's coming up next week, and we could be having a lot of teams both on the buyers and sellers market because there's some high price talent in hefty payrolls for teams that just aren't very good this year. You look at teams like Houston, Dallas, even the New York Giants could be sellers at the market. The Minnesota Vikings have already sent Yannick Ngakoue to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And then Atlanta is 1-6 right now, and they are horrible and could be looking to get on board with the fire sale. That's five teams right there that have talent on their rosters. And heck, the New York Jets could be in this conversation too of just wanting to ditch players.
Could be.
And so there's 5 to 6 teams that you could be saying are red hot sellers at a deadline where we look at injuries and the opt-outs that have been played across the NFL. We could have more buyers and sellers at this deadline. It could be like an NBA-esque trade deadline for the NFL.
So we already seen, like you just mentioned, that Minnesota sold off very quickly. I mean, talk about cutting bait and saying, all right, they're done. Obviously, they've made their decision enough to let you know is that everybody's up in a sense. Is that what does it mean for Mike Zimmer and what that situation is? Who's the next closest seller realistically?
Atlanta. I think Atlanta is.
Realistically, you think Atlanta is? And what do they have assets wise to be able to start negotiating? Is it Julio Jones? Is it Matt Ryan? Those are two high priced, big time guys.
10 former first rounders on your offense is a pretty good starting point.
I am going to, it's a good call. It's a good call with Atlanta. And since you've done that, I'm going to go my next guess of teams that are, because we got to look at coaching situations. It's already been fired. So that's why I can't use what Dallas is. And I'm going to say it's the Houston Texans.
That's a good one.
Just because you've already moved off your coach. And so I think that, I know the rumors may be J.J. Watt or what you're willing to do, because it's going to happen pretty quick. I think we get some moves. Somebody's going to be selling off a big high-priced guy, and whether or not it's going to work or not, I don't know. But this all comes down to teams needing to get something to make that extra playoff push, and there are a lot of teams that need some stuff, and Seattle needs a pass rusher.
Yeah, and which way do you go then? I mean, do you go down the lines of J.J. Watt? And, I mean, do you have the money to pay J.J. Watt? Because, I mean, even in his prorated salary, dude makes $15 million a year. And that is a lot of cash that's moving forward. Or do you go down the roads of like picking up Whitney Mercilus, seeing if they're going to be willing to part with a guy like Whitney Mercilus, who's an outside backer and can give you some help on the edge?
Well, it's got to be, from the rumors are right now, it's Everson Griffin with the Cowboys, that the Seahawks are the number one landing spot. And he doesn't hurt that bad. Just a one-year deal, $6 million he signed. He's 32 years old. So he's right along the same age as J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, a lot more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe. You got to make big-time decisions going into, and I only think the defense can get better in Seattle. I don't know if they can get much worse right now where they're at. So they're going to get healthier. They're going to get Harrison. They're going to get Jamal Adams back. They're going to have some depth at linebacker with Kendricks coming up off the practice squad. So let's hope that makes the decision. But they need pass rush help. That's just it.
By the way, Brady Henderson, ESPN, he said after allowing 519 yards to Arizona, the Seahawks have allowed the most yards through six games in NFL history.
Staggering. I don't know how you can look at.
That's not just coaching. That's dudes too, right?
It's dudes,
I mean,
and
it's
coaching.
Everything.
And to be 5-1 with that hanging over you, that's
unbelievable.
Pretty impressive.
They have given up 2,875 yards in 6 games.
Did we really think that going into the 2020 season that let Russ eat also meant let everyone else eat on defense when you're playing them? Is that really?
No.
There's no way I would have thought that.
No, I didn't think that it would amount to the defense being historically bad. Like this is groundbreaking. No team has ever given up that many yards. So you do need help, and you need it in a big way. If they're not active at the trade deadline, that's got to be concerning, right?
Well, they've made some moves. Like I just said, Jamal Adams will get back. Mm-hmm. That was a big move. They traded 2 first round picks. I think that was active prior to the season. It's a good move. Bring in Wilkins, talked him out of retirement. That's a big dude, big body guy. I mean, what are the reports? He was, 340, 350? It's a huge man.
You know,
so what will that do? That'll be a 2-gap guy that will take up blockers and let you have 1-on-1 matchups. That's better. Bringing in Kendricks, I know he's coming off an ACL and he's got his issues with the legal trouble and whether he'll be in federal prison. But
come the playoffs,
linebacker depth. They're willing to make those moves and they're kind of cash strapped. They got to get healthy.
Well, and here's, you mentioned the Jamal Adams part, and this is why the Seahawks being active at the deadline is so important, is that you don't have draft picks. You don't. Yeah. I mean, how are you going to improve this defense that is really bad if you don't have draft picks too? So you've got to do it at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be willing to move off of somebody in order to acquire a position of need.
Yep.
But here's the thing is where's the depth at on this team where they can afford to get rid of somebody?
I don't know.
Because it's not at running back anymore. Right? Because of running back, everybody's hurt.
Well, you got to look at assets. What's their number one asset right now? It's Russell Wilson, is DK Metcalf. So if you, what's your next best asset? Jamal, you're not getting rid of him. What's your best asset on defense currently? Are you willing to part with any of that? Shaquem Griffin might be up. He's going to be a free agent. So what do you do with him? Is he helpful? Is he really a difference maker at corner, or is he a solid corner? Could you move there, go with a patchwork scenario, and try to figure out where is your path of least resistance? Can I move guys potentially somewhere and then really focus on pass rush? How much of a corner do you need? These are really legit questions, and that's why John Schneider and Pete Carroll are they're diving into it, and I guarantee you they dived into it over the break, because that bye week was a big deal for them.
I know he's been really good. I mean, he's been phenomenal. But you're talking about, if Josh Gordon is reinstated, is
nobody's
Tyler Lockett
no,
a
hell
guy
no.
that you would be willing to get rid of? Because if you look at it in moving forward, he $12.25 million you're paying Tyler Lockett.
Yeah,
he's a,
I know,
damn good player.
He's a really good player. Somebody that has 15 catches, 200 yards, and 3 touchdowns, and you're going to move him to the wayside. I think Russell Wilson would have a coronary.
Well, yeah, I know, but you'd have Josh Gordon, hopefully.
I don't know. We haven't had any word on Josh
and
Gordon.
That would be the thing, is you'd have to have assurances that you're getting somebody back and in return to kind of be a...
What is there? There's nobody else on defense that you can think of. I mean, you have aging guys. You have things that are in there. This is going to come down to how much they covet their aging talent.
See, and here's...
Dwayne Brown's a solid left tackle. You're not moving him.
Who would want to take anybody on that defense?
I don't know. There's a couple guys that you could do it. I mean, the only guy, your older player, let's look at the older players that you have on defense. As Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, they drafted young at linebacker. I can't think of any other guys that I'm looking at the depth and saying, what would you be willing to move or trade?
In the hard part,
you're not
about
moving
this?
Bobby Wagner or KJ Wright. I don't think you are.
No.
There's no way in hell you're doing that.
No, because those guys are your anchors that you have. Those are the guys who are producing.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting spot for the Seahawks, but desperate teams will have uneven trades, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that is that is a good thing. But also on the flip side of this, you're dealing with San Francisco, who's looking for guys at the exact same positions that you are right now. Yeah. Edge rushers, secondary help, and running back right now. I mean, if you're looking at where the Seahawks need help and they need it now, that's exactly where San Francisco needs the exact same help.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in your division. So can you put together a package that's more appealing to a team looking to sell somebody off? It's going to be fascinating.
And the final question is going to be, what will Ken Norton do if he does have a little bit of talent and we see the same style? Then you got to go Pete Carroll.
Mm.
You got to look at this conversation.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll talk about that. Plus, why didn't the Cowboys have Andy Dalton's back? Still a lot to get to. Dustin Cam on the Fan.
Thanks for making it on out.
All right, you asked a question. What do you do with Ken Norton? Ken Norton. What does Ken Norton do? We're talking trade deadlines, buyers and sellers. If you could pick one guy, would it be the J.J. Watt to go and get, obviously? Like, if those teams that we were saying, fire sale, they're going to be selling, you want to see, get that, kick the tires on what it's going to take to get a J.J. Watt out of Houston?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think he's got left?
Depends on what you need.
He's had a lot of serious injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not exactly young anymore.
Depends on the scheme. He's never been in a true 4-3 scheme. You know, mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy? He's always been in an odd front, a 34, where he's gone from being a 3 technique all the way out, where he's done some 5 technique and 9 techniques. They've put him there, but his shift and move, he's never been in a true 43 front, which there's probably been some adjustments in some of that. But what would you do? Would you ask him to have 25 plays a game, give me 2-3 tackles and a half sack, maybe a sack? Just knowing that he's there, defenses have to account for him. That's part of the mental game
mm-hmm.
of what you do. So I don't know what he has left. Every time I think of an old player, they go to New England and they have a resurgence. And it's how you really use them, invest with these guys. And sometimes a little bit of juice and a new change of scenery. You can get a team that's 5-1 like Seattle. They're two players away on defense from being a legit Super Bowl contender.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see on Houston's roster. He's a local guy, but Brennan Scarlett, and if he could fit, too, on the edge there. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you may not be able to lure a star out of one of these teams, but can you fill these holes enough, right? And I think, like, when you're looking at teams like Houston, or do you think Dallas is in fire sale mode yet? I mean, Everson no. Griffin is on the table, but he was like a rental, and they're like, hey, if we're not
I think
really
receiver, they
for
are.
It.
I think receiver, they got too many receivers. You don't need the kind of depth that they have and the kind of money that they have invested in their receivers. You certainly have your perennial one. You have your two. It's Michael Gallup is the one that you can probably move off of. He's going to be expensive. How are you going to pay him? You're not going to give him a big contract. He's going to be a free agent. So what do you do with him?
Yeah, and you're not going to get rid of Lamb because he's on his rookie deal and correct. You just paid Cooper. So
right. You
yeah,
got
I mean,
one
that,
and two.
That would make sense.
You need to get rid of that. And I'm sure you're entertaining quite a few
Michael
calls on him.
Michael Gallup, $972,000.
Pretty reasonable.
That's a steal.
Yep.
And you get that prorated.
Yeah.
And this text, I mean, you guys just brought it up, but Dallas has Everson Griffin, and they could use some draft picks. And now, listen, I know that the Seahawks don't have high draft picks, but if Griffin's a rental, then they might, and they know that this season's a wash for them, they might be willing to take some lower round draft picks for someone like him.
Yeah. Mm.
That would be interesting. But the Ken Norton Jr. Question is a fascinating one, because Brady Henderson of ESPN mentioned he had the tweet on how bad the defense has been, but he also had a quote from Pete Carroll, and Pete Carroll was like, he's putting his ass in the jackpot alongside Ken Norton, saying, I am involved. So like everything that's going on with the coaching staff,
yeah.
He said, I'm there with them too. So yeah. I'm all part of it. I'm not separating anything here. We have to keep working on our players to put them in the best positions to be aggressive. And he was asked about like the play calling and in-game decisions. And he said, we work real close as a whole staff. We work about what the plan is. We work about the calls and the situations and when we're mm-hmm. doing stuff. Kenny calls the game for the most part, but I add stuff in it as we're going. I'm in the conversation the whole way with him, trying to help out as much as I can.
Yeah.
And so
that's about right. I wouldn't expect him that he's leaving Coach Norton on the hook by himself and standing back with like pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I'm not. Yeah, of course he is.
You see these. So you think that Ken Norton may be getting a little bit of a raw deal here in this, that Pete Carroll, who is a defensive guy by trade and his defenses he's always been involved with, whether it is, you know, Dan Quinn or whomever his coordinator, Chris Richard or whoever.
The natural reaction for fans or for anybody that watches football thinks that coordinators are all on their own. Now, if you're a defensive-minded head coach, that couldn't be further from the truth. It's like asking Bill Belichick to not be part of any conversation when it comes to defense,
right.
Which is insane because he is in lockstep with all of that. As often and it, multiple times, he's going to be in those conversations. That's like saying that Matt Nagy's not, he's calling plays. Andy Reid calling plays. So whatever got them to that top spot as a head coach, of course, Pete Carroll's going to be involved in that. And Ken Norton is taking a lot of the punch.
Uh-huh.
He's taken a lot of it because the last few years, and this is a personnel choice they've done.
Yep.
The Seahawks have not developed good personnel the last three seasons. They have not.
And they went from a focus of being a defensive team to everybody. And we've criticized Seattle. Put more around Russell Wilson. The offensive line was atrocious, and they've gone and they've helped him. The wide receiving core, and this has been something you complained about a lot, he never had anybody. Well, they went and they got guys, and they put them around him.
Mm-hmm.
And now you sit there and you go, that comes at a cost, though. The $31 million that you pay Russell Wilson, the adding of a dominant left tackle in Dwayne Brown at whatever, what's his number, like $13, $14, $15 million, whatever you're paying your left tackle,
right,
paying Tyler Lockett, paying these guys and using that draft capital on a guy like DK Metcalf, that does not, it comes at a cost, and it's come at the defensive side of the football. And so now people are like, wait a minute. We've always been good at defense.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a surprise that they're not that good. It is a surprise they're historically bad, but it's not a surprise they've taken a massive step backwards.
Well, think about their draft picks they've done since 2016, guys. Okay, since 2016, where is that defensive player that you can lean on? Where is that bell cow? Where is the somebody that you can say?
Bobby Wagner. That's a guy.
Bobby Wagner was, he's part of, that's so long ago. Your number one pick in 2016 was Jermaine Ifedi at 31st. And then you had Jaron Reed and C.J. Procise. By the way, C.J. Procise cut by the Houston Texans. So might have a reunion with Seattle.
Yeah.
Could happen very quickly. Oh, by the way, in 2017, your first pick was a second round pick, but it was Malik McDowell. And it never worked out.
Well, he got into that ATV accident.
And then you have Shaquille Griffin, but that's it. He's your best. There's nobody. Chris Carson is a seventh round pick, and he's your best guy. He's on offense, developing defensive talent. Let's go to 2018. Rashad Penny. Rasheem Green. What? Will Dissly.
What round was Will Dissly?
He was a fourth round pick. Fourth round pick.
Really?
I'll go into 2019. Let's keep going. LJ Collier. Well, Marquise Blair. DK Metcalf. There's offense.
Well, your first two picks for defense, though.
Yeah, but have they been standout players that have given you the kind of production that you're hoping when you spend a first and a second round on them?
What is no?
No. And then finally here, another first round overall pick, Jordan Brooks. Now, okay, the thing is that when everyone says give it time, let's see if it works. Defensive end, Daryl Taylor in the second round. This is John Schneider and Pete Carroll hit on a one-time draft. Okay, this is true to the core. They have never hit on an offensive lineman, and that's, I don't know how the evaluations of offensive linemen go. They have never hit on an offensive lineman in this group, and you hit on one draft, and you had the Legion of Boom, and you hit it right, and you hit on Russell Wilson, and that's how this is. This is crapshoots. It's just not, you're just sitting out there going, whoop, 7-7-7-7-7, bang, and you hit one, you got a Super Bowl, you're legendary. That's how it works in this league. It's so hard week in and week out, year in and year out, to develop talent and get Bill Belichick's never drafted a good quarterback, ever. Ever.
I don't know.
In the top picks, quarterbacks, you're guessing. Okay, is how good is Jimmy Garoppolo?
No.
I mean, Tom Brady. Those things
that
are like...
That was a second-round pick on Garoppolo. He didn't, in with Tom Brady...
Jacoby Brissett, all these guys, are they superstars? We don't know.
Starting-level guys, okay, though.
How good are they at drafting wide receivers?
Not good. They just don't do it.
They don't know how to do it, or their offensive line drafts are great.
Their offensive and defensive lines and linebackers are phenomenal. They're all defense.
Yes.
Did they draft defense better than anybody? Because if you look at their first round picks, I mean, they'll go in the secondary, and then they'll go defensive line.
Yeah.
And then they'll use
their
middle
round
picks.
You want to use the Tom Brady example for Bill Belichick? It was
a sixth round pick.
And it was one of those, is like, hey, we need a guy to kind of take care of Drew Brees or Drew Bledsoe and his $100 million contract. That was never in the cards.
They didn't know what they had there. But drafting a quarterback is really hard, and that's why everybody's trying so desperately to get Trevor Lawrence right now.
Sure is.
But I think when you look at it, I think that what Seattle's going through right now is it highlights so much how well New England, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Green Bay. People criticize Green Bay all the time. Green Bay drafts very well because how often do they have backslides?
Would they have
where
to draft?
They're
well.
Historically bad. They do.
They and, have and guess to what? Because they can't get free agents.
They all do it.
Yeah.
They all do it very, very well. And sustained success over a long time is really hard. And those franchises, man,
well, get,
boy, they've done a fantastic job.
If you can hit on your quarterback and hit on your O-line, then you can create. Then you can. That's why the Dallas Cowboys had that run where you thought, oh my gosh, this team's going to be. But they couldn't get over that hump. That's why San Francisco can do it so well right now. You hit on your quarterback. Now they haven't drafted a quarterback. They traded for one. We know Jimmy's going to get you there over and over again. He might be the guy in and out. It feels like every week it's like Jimmy's in, Jimmy's out.
He's great and he sucks. Same time. Does it at the same time. It's really rare trait that he has.
Feels great, baby.
Just think Indianapolis at some point in time had the best quarterback. They had Andrew Luck, and they had the best offensive line. We would have been talking about Indy, if Andrew Luck doesn't retire, of being a perennial Super Bowl team back and forth. And he shuts down, and they're like, crap, we just built the O-line to help you, and you left us?
Hey, they're sneaky, a good teams again.
I know.
Indy, good football.
This text says, at the end of the year, Seattle's going to be 12-4, going to have a top three seed in a home game and a great chance to go to the Super Bowl, even with that defense, and I'll take it.
Okay, 12-4. That's bold. I'm thinking 11-5, but that's fair.
Well, one whole game.
No, 11-5 means you're a wild card team. You might not win the division. I don't know if you win the division 11-5. Teams might come and get you. We don't know. It's happened before. I've seen 11-5 teams.
Games.
Those division matchups are going to determine so much.
Ruthless.
And this week, it all starts. You got San Francisco this week.
Yep.
And good thing for Seattle is that San Francisco banged up again. Debo Samuel not going to play. Jeff Wilson Jr. not going to play.
They're still going to put up 400 yards offense.
And run for like 190 yards. They have Jimmy Garoppolo.
George Kittle.
And Jimmy Garoppolo.
You just need George.
Who's great.
Give George.
All right. Why didn't the Cowboys have Andy Dalton's back? 503-250-1080. Here's Buck. Why do the Dallas Cowboys hate Andy Dalton? They know. They don't really hate Andy Dalton. No, but the big talking point out of Sunday's game where he got cheap-shotted by John Bostic is why didn't everybody have his back? Nobody went to fight for old Andy Dalton there.
Nobody did.
I would love for the offensive line just to go, hey, guys, there's COVID protocols. We couldn't get face-to-face with anybody. It'd be against the rules right now. We weren't masked up. Sorry. I couldn't fight John Bostic because of that.
Right.
But it was jarring to see a quarterback get cheap-shotted and nobody really do anything about it. No. And Jerry Jones's response makes less sense than what actually happened on the field.
You know, sometimes the players don't see it. You know, they're blocking. They're doing their job. They're not seeing exactly what's going on, and certainly a tough situation. So, you know, obviously Coach McCarthy, you know, had some things to say about that, and we'll just, you know, we'll move forward as we go forward. I know Andy has tremendous amount of respect on this football team. Everybody admires him. Everybody admires about how he goes about his business.
It's so – Dusty, this is so – detrimental to the Cowboys. I don't think anybody realizes it.
And or I maybe don't believe they, what Jerry Jones is saying.
Right. It is so detrimental to the organization to constantly undermine your head coach and come out and talk over it. Have you ever seen, remember the picture of Bill Gates standing over, I think it was, I can't remember the old classic movie, former Apple owner who created owner, passed away.
Not Tim Cook. Oh my gosh. Steve Jobs.
Jobs and kind of overseeing and looking over the top of him and always scrutinizing and kind of like, look at me, I did this. And that's what Jerry Jones, he doesn't do it in a malicious way. He does it in an intention way because it's about me and we want to do that because that's how his whole persona is. And that the fact that he's on a radio show discussing the inner workings of the team and talking about, well, I don't think Coach McCarthy and does that is he shouldn't. It's so detrimental to the whole organization because now every player is looking past Coach McCarthy and they look to Jerry. I said this earlier. Nobody respects head coaches in the Cowboys organization because Jerry does not step away.
And how is that? But how is that undermining Mike McCarthy when he says, you know, I have faith that Coach McCarthy has got this thing under control?
Because nobody believes, Jerry, that there's faith. Because the faith has to come, and it has to come from him. Because from every conversation over and over, the loyalty is to what Jerry thinks is real. And he's going to tell you what you want to hear on a radio show.
But in this whole thing, like, Jerry Jones doesn't like what happened either.
No, of course. No, so, and that's not what I'm saying, is that it creates a power triangle that doesn't give any credibility to your coach at all. Yeah. Zero.
So even when he does try to send a message, there is none. And this isn't I get what you're saying. And this is more of a case of Jerry Jones just shut up and don't say anything, period. Not that you're saying anything bad right now. It's just, why are you even talking, period? Because there will be times where Mike McCarthy gets undermined by
He's going to talk till the day he's no longer with us.
And I think the thing that makes it really tough is that Jerry is like on Monday morning, right out of the gate, before the coach's presser, before the players have talked. I mean, you have your postgame stuff, but the first people or the first person that fans hear from on Monday morning is not from the team. It's Jerry.
And it's not for anybody he has nothing to do with the game plan. Unless I mean, in those meetings, I'm like, I don't know the relationship with Coach McCarthy now, but is he sitting in the game plan? Do you really want to hear from an owner about every detail of your organization, or do you want to hear from the people that are actually doing the football stuff?
Well, I think fans do. I think
us
fans
is interesting.
Do.
It's interesting.
I think fans honestly do want to hear it.
And put Jody Allen on after every Blazer game. Let's see how exciting that will be. And how undermining and detrimental that would be.
Well, but it is exciting because Jerry Jones gives you something every time he does speak out.
So,
you know? So I mean, that's why he does it. If he wasn't interesting, nobody would care.
Correct. So it is a show. It's a television show. It's entertainment. Jerry's doing this for entertainment.
And it's the biggest brand. Like if this was Shad Khan with the Jaguars, nobody would give a rip.
Yeah.
But it is the Cowboys. It is Jerry. It's a sideshow. It's a disaster. And that's why people care about it.
This text coming in on the hit, it says, it's BS that none of the linemen saw it. In the video of him getting knocked out, you can clearly see a Cowboys lineman that he got hit and rushed over to Dalton immediately. Yeah. They should have gone after 100%. Bostic, but shows you how bad that organization has become with the new coaching staff and loss of Prescott, who it looks like was the one holding everything together.
He was the glue. He was the leader. And also, too, you have holdovers for that. There are Jerry's guys that are on the staff that Coach McCarthy didn't want on the staff. There's a lot of disconnection. There needs to be a gutting of that entire place and a restart. It does feel that way. It's just, it's disappointing to see that. And Andy Dalton didn't deserve that, man. He deserved his guys having his back. And if you're walking off that field and you're looking at all your teammates and you're going, really?
I have questions about Andy Dalton or Dak Prescott really holding everything together, though. Because
he was a great leader, man.
He
was.
Dak Prescott also had the benefit of having a healthy offensive line for a majority of that time. And when they got hurt, he got hurt.
Yeah.
And Andy Dalton stepped in with no starting offensive line. Zach Martin played, a series before he got hurt last week?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like this is completely Andy Dalton's fault, and it's not like the Dallas Cowboys were really any good when Dak was in there, but they had the benefit of being more healthy. And I really do think that there is something to the fact that it was Andy Dalton behind center and not Dak Prescott. But I think there is a lot at play with five backup offensive linemen on the field.
Well, of course, there's a reason why you're a backup
and not having his back. Yeah.
It's the old saying, is the next man up mentality. Well, if the next man was better than the guy that was the starter, we'd be good anyway. Well, that's not true, because the next man up is a backup for a reason.
Yeah.
They're not as good as their starters. So to expect the same kind of production, and Ezekiel Elliott wearing sleeves, fumbling the ball all over the place. He knows he's got ham sandwiches blocking for him. It's like a couple of KFC chickens in front of him just going, please, you want to eat? They're really letting it go by.
See, why wasn't Zeke the guy, though, that is sitting there and having Dalton's back or anybody's back, period?
You really think Ezekiel Elliott is for anybody but Ezekiel Elliott?
But that is another huge issue that they have.
Right.
You know, and that's
question.
It.
No question.
I mean, that's what is wrong.
He's
with
no Emmitt
their
Smith,
roster.
I'll tell you that much. No way in heck.
No. All right. Hey, we got a game six. Will the Dodgers finish off the Tampa Bay Rays? World Series game six tonight. This is Dustin Cam. Game six, World Series tonight down in Arlington, Globe Life Stadium.
Don't you have Dodgers in six?
I do.
have Dodgers in seven.
Blake Snell on the mound opposite Tony Gonsolin.
Is this the bullpen game for the Dodgers?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
why
is, they're gonna
does
lose.
Dave Roberts
they're gonna lose.
Want to have a game seven?
They're going to lose. It's good for television. It's the Dodgers.
I don't get what he's done with this rotation most of the postseason.
I don't get what he's done with all pitching.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't get it.
You make a good point here. You make a good point. Yeah, I don't get it. Last time they went bullpen game, they lost 6-4.
If they win, it's a great move. If they lose, we're like, here we go again. Here we go again. Then Buehler goes game seven.
But why? Yeah. So you're saving Walker Buehler.
Which Buehler is seven with Kershaw out of the pen.
For a potential game
Jensen
seven.
Kelly Jensen is going to be sitting in a lawn chair somewhere on the beach. Well, don't let him out of the pen.
But here's my thing with Dave Roberts. Why wouldn't you pitch Walker Buehler today?
Short rest.
To win a baseball game?
I don't know. That's a great question.
And then you go, tomorrow bullpen. We will have our bullpen game, but guess who we can start on short rest?
Yeah.
Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, I
and
agree.
Then
you
go
win
to the
now.
Bullpen. Like, finish him off while you can. Don't sit there and be like, well, we're going to go with the bullpen game. We think we got a real good shot. Why? Why? I don't
Okay, so let's predict. Let's predict what happens tonight. They get hammered.
No, I don't know.
A close game, good game.
I think the Rays get this one. This team doesn't roll over.
No, they don't.
Oh goodness,
they fight back. They took Houston. They got out to that 3-0 lead, and Houston stormed it all the way back, and they battled.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. But history will tell us that the Rays will win because they went Dodgers, Rays, Dodgers, Rays, Dodgers,
Rays.
And then guess who's going to win game seven?
Can we get Clayton Kershaw get three wins? Let's say hypothetical situation. No. They lose tonight, so the Dodgers, so it's 3-3.
Wow.
Game seven.
I have the Dodgers winning tonight.
I know. Okay, all right. But you know, it's not. Did you put money on it?
Despite Dave Roberts.
Did you put money on it?
No, I will, though. Right, okay. I'll go to the Oregon Lottery scoreboard app and
put a little coin on it.
Throw something in there.
Throw your fake Venmo money at it.
It's real money.
Yeah.
That might be your problem with Venmo. You know it's real money,
I
right?
know it's real money. It just doesn't feel the same. I can't touch it. It's not real. Think of that crispy sound of cash. It's nothing like it. But hypothetical situation. Let's say this. Because we haven't seen. When's the last time we've had a starter get three wins? So Buehler comes in. He goes, I don't know, 5 1/3. Let's say he gets 5 1/3. And scores 3-3. So he gets a no decision. Clayton Kershaw comes in. Or no, let's do it. Three innings. Clayton gets knocked out. Something's wrong. You get bases juiced. So they go bullpen. And then you bring in Clayton Kershaw. And he gets in some way, he pitches four innings. And then now a pitcher gets three wins in the World Series and right off into the sunset. I mean, because we haven't seen it. Who's the last pitcher that's got three wins in the World Series?
Madison Bumgarner.
I like this. I like the scenario. Well, it's good for television.
Well, and it would be good for Clayton Kershaw to do that.
It would. But if Buehler's in there, he's such a good. I mean, every time I see Buehler, I just want to start dancing in tight white pants because that's just tight pants. Because it's spectacular how tight his pants are. But no, that's the guy. If you're going to go there with that game seven, you want Buehler on the mound.
Yeah. I don't
know. On an extra day's rest.
I just don't see why you're not doing it in game six.
You can't be saving his arm for anything. That's the thing that Dave Roberts, he tries to do these outthinking. I'm going to put the lefty in versus the lefties, and then they redesignate, and then he goes to Canley. That was the biggest buffoonery anyway, by not leaving Gratterall in. Just not doing it.
Game three, what was that? Was that on Friday night? Yeah, that was on Friday night. So you're looking at, what, 4 days rest that he's had?
Longer, because wasn't there a Saturday night was the game, was the crazy one, and there was so Friday was an off day, right?
No, they went Friday, Saturday.
Oh, Sunday. They did go, okay, yeah. All right.
So, I mean, you're looking at, I mean, it's not an inordinately short rest that he'd be on. Mm. So I'll never understand the idea of going to the bullpen game. In these situations.
I can understand if it's a series in July, but not the World Series.
Oh, yeah.
Strangely enough, those analytics work really well in July. It's the World Series.
Mm. All right. Well, hey, Blake Snell, John Gonsolin, Why the bullpen game? Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll find out. Also, something to keep an eye on. We mentioned that Graham Mertz, the record-setting quarterback for Wisconsin, he tested positive for COVID. His backup also has tested positive for COVID, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
And the original starter, Jackie Cohn, with a broken foot, I believe.
So for the next three games,
Wildcat,
you could have Danny Vandenboom as your starting quarterback.
That sounds like a made-up player.
Danny Vandenboom stepping in.
Sounds Dutch.
He sounds like he should be in Varsity Blues or something.
Sure.
But Danny Vandenboom, the four-string quarterback.
I guess he's a blonde, tall.
A redshirt junior.
Vandenboom.
He might be the starting quarterback for three games if the COVID protocols are what they are in the Big Ten, which is 21 days.
He is tall, 6'5".
Look at that.
Guess what? Those three games are Nebraska, Purdue, and Michigan.
Boy, winnable games.
Welcome to the Big Ten, Danny Vandenboom. So that's a hell of a thing.
Also, we got Dez Bryant to the Ravens practice squad official.
Good for them. Oh. They get another big wide receiver. It gives Lamar Jackson a nice, good, big target.
Danny Vandenboom, not blonde.
No. Okay.
Disappointing.
All right.
Is he brown redhead? Hair.
Redhead hate. How's that pole working out?
He's brown.
How's the pole?
He's brown.
Tell me the pole.
And he went to a
56.6%, not a redhead.
Oh.
113 votes in.
People have spoken.
Oh, not yet. It's a 24-hour poll.
I don't think you're getting this one back, Dusty.
All right. Andy
no Doyle
Reed
rules.
Is a redhead. Danny Vandenboom is the quarterback at Wisconsin. Also, he not a redhead. All right, World Series Game 6 tonight. We'll be back tomorrow. Cam's got his power rankings of the NFL. Up next, we got the Herd with Colin Cowherd, 9 to noon, noon to 3, Durden's Break, 3 to 7, primetime with Isaac and Suk. And then Duck Insider with Joey Mack. Have a great Tuesday, see Wednesday, right here on The Fan.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.